everyone, I'm Darren Newman. This is the Range of Reasonable Responses podcast. Thanks for joining me. In this series, I've been looking at classic employment law cases, but in this episode, I'm going to cheat a bit because the case I'm going to look at isn't actually to do with employment law at all. I'm going to be talking about the case of James against Eastleigh Borough Council. That's a House of Lords case about the nature of direct discrimination. It's something that's still very relevant today. And in fact, we're still trying to digest exactly what James against Eastleigh means. The House of Lords made its decision in June of 1990, which surprised me actually when I looked this up, because in my head, I think of James and Eastleigh Borough Council as being really quite an old case. But 1990 is about when I start to think that the modern world starts. Though looking back at it, Margaret Thatcher was still Prime Minister at the time, though the writing was on the wall and she was starting to look a little bit shaky. There was really good news, though. The Berlin Wall was coming down. The East German government had actually started to dismantle it. And a single mother called Joanne Rowling had a good idea for a book when she was taking a train journey. And she later started writing Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. So just in case you're thinking that it was a really cool month, I have to report that the number one hit single was World in Motion by New Order in conjunction with the England football team. That's really quite an abomination, to be honest. But anyway, Mr. James and his wife were both aged 61. And in November 1985, they went to the Fleming Park Leisure Centre in Eastleigh, where the council was operating a swimming pool. And the council had a policy of allowing anyone who was of pensionable age to get into the pool for free. The trouble was that although they were both aged 61, only Mrs. James was of pensionable age. Mr. James wouldn't qualify for his old age pension until he was 65. And so he was required to pay the extortionate fee of 75 pence in order to get into the swimming pool. Mr. James was so aggrieved that he had to pay this sum that he brought a claim for sex discrimination, which resulted in him some 5 years later getting this judgment from the House of Lords. If ever there was a case where it's not the money, it's the principle of the thing, then James and Eastleigh Borough Council is it. It's important to note, however, Mr. James wasn't funding this case himself. He was backed by the Equal Opportunities Commission, who saw this as an important test case. The Equal Opportunities Commission was the precursor to the Equality and Human Rights Commission that we have today. Two differences. One, it only dealt with sex discrimination. We didn't have quite as many protected characteristics in those days. The second important difference was it actually had a budget, so it was able to fund test cases like this. So the argument that Mr. James is putting forward is that the council were discriminating against him by not allowing him to have free access to the swimming pool on the same basis that women were given free access to the swimming pool. Women could get free access when they reached pensionable age at 60, whereas men would only get their free place when they reached their pensionable age of 65. The council argued, on the other hand, that the less favourable treatment of Mr. James was not based on his sex. It was not on the grounds of sex. It was on the grounds of his qualification for an old age pension. That condition, qualify for an old age pension, was something that the council applied equally to both men and women. The Court of Appeal agreed with that, and they emphasised that it was clear that the reason that the council had adopted its policy was not a desire to discriminate against men, but in order to help those who are in need, whether they were male or female. Essentially, what the Court of Appeal was emphasising was the reason for the council acting as it did, rather than a sort of bland causation. It was true that, but for the fact that Mr. James was a man, he would have been allowed to access the pool for free. But the fact was that he wasn't denied free access to the pool because he was a man, at least not in the eyes of the council. Does that make sense? Well, it did to the Court of Appeal, at least. So off we go to the House of Lords. By a majority, the House of Lords decided that the Court of Appeal was wrong and that Mr. James had, in fact, been discriminated against. One of the leading judgments is given by Lord Bridge, who we last met in the case of Polkey against A. Dayton Services Limited. And what he said was that the fallacy of the council's argument is that it failed to recognise that pensionable age itself, which was fixed at 60 for women and 65 for men, was in itself a criterion which directly discriminated between men and women, because it treated women more favourably than men on the grounds of their sex. He said that it followed inevitably that any different treatment of men and women which used that criterion would in itself amount to direct discrimination. The expression pensionable age was no more than a convenient shorthand expression which referred to the age of 60 in a woman and to the age of 65 in a man. So in considering whether there'd been discrimination against a man on the ground of his sex, it couldn't possibly make any difference whether the discriminator used that shorthand expression, pensionable age, or spelt out its full meaning, well, women can get free access at 60, men can get full access at 65. The Court of Appeal, he said, had tried to get away from that conclusion by taking the phrase on the ground of her sex, which was the way the Sex Discrimination Act expressed it, as referring to the discriminator's reason for doing the thing that was being complained of. On this issue, Lord Bridge referred to a House of Lords decision from the previous year, a judicial review case called Queen against Birmingham City Council Ex Parte Equal Opportunities Commission. That's the way they phrased case names in judicial review cases in those days. And in that case, a local education authority had, in its allocation of places at single-sex grammar schools, had set a higher pass mark for girls than for boys because there were fewer girls' places available. In finding that that was direct sex discrimination, the House of Lords said that the motive or intention of the party that does the discriminating is irrelevant. What matters is whether, because of sex, people are treated less favourably. So Lord Bridge takes from this that the test for discrimination is objective. What we have to ask is, would Mr. James have been treated more favourably if he'd been a woman? And the answer was, yes. If he'd been a woman, he would have been of pensionable age and he would have been given free access to the swimming pool. Two other Law Lords agreed with him. Lord Acner had a lovely phrase. He said that the council was applying a gender determinative formula for entitlement to free swimming, which I think puts it rather nicely. Meanwhile, Lord Gough stressed that someone would not be saved from a charge of direct discrimination simply because they had acted from a benign motive. So Mr. James wins his case, and presumably after 5 years of litigation, he gets his 75p back. I hope he was happy about that. More importantly, we're left with a very important case that tries to grapple with what direct discrimination is all about. I think that there are a number of points to make about James and what it means. First of all, it would be a mistake to think that James means that motivation is irrelevant when considering a discrimination case. There are certainly situations where an employer's motivation, for example, can turn something that's otherwise not discrimination into a discriminatory act. So turning someone down for a job is not in itself a discriminatory act. But if you do that because you are motivated by your hostility towards people who are black or who are of a particular ethnic origin or of a particular gender, then that will be direct discrimination. So there are some cases where discriminatory motivation is precisely what we look for in a discrimination case. What James is about is where the employer or other alleged discriminator is using a specific criterion, and the question is whether that criterion is discriminatory. What's important, I think, about the criterion that was used in James was that it precisely divided the population into two groups depending on sex. So all women who were age 60 would get free access to the swimming pool, and all men who were age 60 would be required to pay 75 pence. So there was an exact coincidence, if you like, between the criterion that was being used and the protected characteristic, as we'd now call it, of sex. So here's a question for you. Suppose I'm an employer and the criterion I decide to use in deciding who to employ is that I will only employ someone who attended Eton. You could argue that since Eton is a boys' school and therefore only boys can meet the criterion and therefore get a job, that that means that the criterion I'm using is inherently discriminatory. But there isn't an exact correspondence between going to Eton and not going to Eton and being a boy or being a girl. It's true that no girls have attended Eton, but most boys don't attend Eton either. Or how about this real-life example? Suppose you have an employer that deliberately sets out to exploit and abuse employees who have a particular kind of migrant visa. That was precisely the situation in the recent Supreme Court decision of Taiwo and Alegbe. There it was found that the employer had used the fact that domestic workers were on a particular kind of visa that left them vulnerable to exploitation to treat them simply incredibly badly. However, the Supreme Court held that that was not enough for it to be direct discrimination. The reason for that was that while there were no UK citizens who were on that sort of visa, there wasn't an exact correspondence between vulnerability because of that visa and the protected characteristic of nationality. In other words, while it was true that no UK citizens would have this particular vulnerability, it was also true that not all citizens of the worker's home country, which happened to be Nigeria, would be vulnerable in the same way that they were. It wasn't their nationality that made them vulnerable, it was the particular visa that they were employed on. Now, I think that that takes a very limited view of what direct discrimination is, and I would have preferred it if they would have seen a criterion that is based on the visa that someone is employed on as being so inherently linked to their nationality that it's a discriminatory criterion for an employer to use. After all, the courts were quite happy to regard pregnancy as being a discriminatory criterion. Before we had specific rules on pregnancy discrimination, the courts, very much prompted by Europe, regarded less favourable treatment of someone because she was pregnant as being so inherently wound up with her sex that it was direct sex discrimination. But a criterion based on pregnancy doesn't exactly divide the world into men and women, because at any one time, most women aren't actually pregnant. Just as most people from Nigeria aren't on a domestic worker's visa. So the James case was 25 years ago now, and we still haven't entirely figured out exactly how direct discrimination works. Anyway, my head hurts now. I hope yours doesn't too. But I think we should stick with discrimination, and in the next podcast, I want to widen things out a bit and look at a general issue that's very much in the news at the moment, which is discriminatory dress codes. So do join me for that. In the meantime, I will be returning to classic employment law cases of the past. I just like talking about them. So do get in touch if there's any particular case you'd like me to take a look at. You can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Daz Newman. Thanks for listening. Express yourself. Create the space. You know you can. It's an awful song, isn't it? Beat the man. Take him on. You never give up.